Hi there, boys and girls. This is Jello Biafra, and you're listening to CFMU 93.3 FM. Why?
I wasn't that interested in setting up any kind of little alternate thing for one type of person, whether it was all breastfeeding mamas or whether it was all homeschoolers.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
Okay, where are we today?
The driving park, which is wrecked.
What used to be a driving park. Right over there, for example.
Right there, right there.
That used to be my favorite climber.
Yeah, and there were some swings over there.
And there was the original park over there.
Yeah.
And then there was these cement tunnels, and they took them away and put plastic ones in. And there used to be this huge, big blue slide, and there's a red one. And then the blue one, we always used to climb up, and then the red one's even harder to climb up, and the red one was the most slippery.
It was a grayish, weird one that was circles, and you had to go in through in the darkness.
There used to be some great swings off that way. And now they took them out. Those are the first swings that disappeared.
Soon they won't have anything.
Then they put a stupid park over there. Then they took out all the old climbers, and everything was gone. One day we came to the park to play, because we liked the park, and everything was gone except for that one over there.
And we went a roundabout. I've never been on a roundabout in my life.
I did when I was two, but that was no fun. That's when they took it out. There's this two slides at the Century Park, one underneath the other, two platforms.
Yeah, we want all the parks
and they were
to go
so much
back
fun.
The way they were.
Otherwise, you can give all the climbers to our neighborhood and we'll put them in our neighborhood, nice and good. Mm-hmm. Got plenty of room for it, plenty of backyards.
Why do you think that they did this?
Safety.
Yeah.
What do you think? Why didn't they do
life it? Life without danger.
Yeah.
If you don't hurt yourself in life, that's the point. And then when you actually go into the real world, you won't be prepared to hurt yourself because you've never hurt yourself before. Well, there's this one park in Burlington, and I wish you'd follow the directions they gave. They had this cool spider web you climb, and they had this wonderful monkey bars that I completely blistered my hands on, and I beat myself up on the spider web, almost fallen. I gave myself slide burns on the slide, and I completely beat myself up the water.
There's a place to get wet over there.
Yeah.
There's a place to get wet here.
I know, but this is a shallow swimming pool, and there's a button to turn it on.
Yeah, and then there's all these screw things.
Oh, yeah.
All the screw things.
Like Bayfront Park, they have that part.
Exactly. Oh, no. Yeah. Exactly, Bayfront Park isn't a park because it doesn't have climbers.
I can give you a great idea for some climbers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
A roundabout.
Well, there's also this park in around the water now facility next to the library there. And it had this really long set of monkey bars. We had all these different stretches with all these things hanging off them.
My name is Yuta Mason, and I live in Toronto, and I have three adult kids, all of whom were homeschooled.
You've been involved in creating public spaces, also projects that really focus, they're oriented around community, such as I was thinking of the oven that you've helped organize, the outdoor oven, and all kinds of different projects, parks. First of all, how did you get onto that path, and how did that start?
Well, if your kids don't go to school, then you haven't got the ready-made form of relationship that takes up a lot of other people's days and also that connects them to one another. Then you have to start looking around for where else your village might be. Malls, churches, you know, the sort of standard other public facilities still are somewhat limiting. And so it seemed to me that it was maybe a place to go and look for other people that my kids could befriend and that I could befriend other families would be in public space. So I just started to look around and see where people might gather. And it certainly seemed to me that parks would be one place where people might gather, but I live just up the street from a 14-acre park that's pretty downtown in Toronto, and a lot of the time it was pretty empty. It seemed like there was space there, but the people didn't really want to come, and I wasn't surprised about that. There was a sports field there and a little playground. It seemed pretty boring. I also initially looked around in, we have quite a lot of indoor community recreation centers in Toronto, and I tried to see if there was maybe a way to make what I thought of as an indoor park. I ended up persuading the manager of one of these big complexes to let us use the gym in that rec center once a week. There were a few of us that went and met with this guy, and so for some years we had this scene that happened every Thursday, and in fact it still goes on at this rec center, where people could just come and hang out in the gym all day. It wasn't just homeschoolers either. It was a lot of people with just new babies. I thought that was pretty interesting what we were able to do there, because the attendance went up pretty quickly from, I guess our first time was like 15 people counting the kids, and then it went up to 80. And, you know, it seemed like people were really kind of yearning for a way to meet people that wasn't so personal, that you asked them right to your house, but that it was a way of not just being strangers that you watch passing across the park or whatever. So I did that for about 10 years, and certainly the kids had lots of adventures and so on, but it still seemed to me that I wasn't that interested in setting up any kind of little alternate thing for one type of person, whether it was all breastfeeding mamas or whether it was all homeschoolers. I was interested in just trying to see who my neighbors were. So it seemed like a park that was out of doors with no walls was a really good way to, you know, to try and work on a park and see if you could get more people interested in coming there. For my taste, it always seemed like it would make more sense to be in a place and try and cultivate a place and then see who comes, rather than to cultivate a community that was maybe a little more homogeneous of your own interests. And the neat thing about a park is that because there are no walls, people can see what you're doing, and that means that they kind of self-select for whether they're interested. We started pretty quickly. There was just a handful of us. I mean, literally probably four people that thought there ought to be some more interesting things that went on in our park. And I got on the phone. I called a few people and I said, you know, we've got a bit of money for the park. We actually had another $15,000 as well that was available to spend just on a sports thing in the park. I was phoning people saying, what would you like to see in the park? The things that people said then that they wanted are pretty well all what has happened. People wanted there to be more things for kids to play who are no longer toddlers. They wanted there to be more stuff for teenagers, for youth. They wanted there to be more beauty in terms of interesting gardens and especially native species stuff. They wanted there to be more arts like music, like theater, and they really wanted there to be food, because, you know, if you're going to be someplace, you might get hungry. and they also, of course, wanted places to sit. If anything good was going to happen, you had to have benches and picnic tables. And so we got the city to put in a basketball court, which was a very interesting decision because it brought a whole bunch of new people into the park, some of whom are jailbirds. And then we got this amazing thing that I still think is our best thing ever, which is called a sand pit, a kind of sand play area that's big. It was 20 by 40 feet surrounded by logs, and they said there should be water and there should be sort of building material. So that was almost a little bit like an adventure playground, and that's really important in a big city where all the space is kind of taken already. One of the early things that we also realized in terms of food was there are all sorts of regulations connected with food in public space, and it seemed like they were going to defeat us, those regulations. But then we thought, well, fire is beautiful, and a cooking fire is really interesting. And we had this friend who's Guatemalan and who grew up cooking over a fire, and who everybody in Guatemala where she lived cooked over fire. So we thought, okay, So we will sort of use these rules against themselves a little. We won't say that we're going to serve food. We're going to say we're going to do a kind of a demonstration thing of how people cooked in the old time or how people cooked in another country. So we started this cooking fire where the Guatemalan woman was cooking, you know, these Guatemalan things. Started to invite school classes sometimes, and sometimes there would just be a few people gathered around the fire. And that was probably one of the best things we ever did, because there's nothing like a campfire to attract people to a place and also to start conversations.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
A couple of years after we realized that cooking fires were a real big attraction, I saw a film that showed a communal bake oven in a little Portuguese village, and I thought, this is interesting, and started talking to people about it, and there seemed to be no enemies to a communal bake oven. So we started making some plans, and by that time the we had changed a little. There were a few more people on board, and we started applying for a little bit of money, and we had made some friends in the parks department, and they were willing to help out a little. So we actually got some bake ovens built, and by then also, you know, everything kind of feeds off the next thing. So when there's bake ovens, that's a good place to discuss whether there ought to be theater. And then there was a guy that has a theater company that makes giant puppets and runs them, and they were temporarily without a good place to make puppets. So we managed to get one of the old orphan buildings. So many parks have little orphan buildings that just become almost like dumping grounds, and they're locked all the time, and they look really sordid. And so we cleaned out one of these little old field houses, and the puppet guy was able to go in there and start using it as his workshop. So by now, our park is definitely, it's the absolute opposite of being deserted. In fact, we have to be really careful now, because it seems like sometimes there's not enough peace and quiet in there. It's full all the time. And so the reason our park is not like another park is not the city puts almost no money into our park in terms of trying to build better things or have a better building or even pave the path. We can hardly get them to do anything like that. But the fact is that as long as people don't have a lot of barriers that prevent them from using their gifts, it's remarkable who turns up. That's the joy of a city.
So it really is a people park, right? It's really a community.
Yeah.
It belongs to the people there.
All our parks belong to the people. It's hard for bureaucrats to remember that.
Yeah.
But that's our joint treasure, right?
This idea of the commons and the public sphere, how it's shrinking, right? And how we're just kind of, when you think about where can you meet people, you know, we have libraries, and that's about it, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you can address that question.
You were wondering about public spaces shrinking. The fact is, Toronto has a lot of orphaned public spaces. And I always thought that it was a really interesting situation for homeschoolers, because homeschoolers are not as tied, or at least at my time. Certainly with my situation, we had a bit more flexibility, and homeschoolers, therefore, can go to a piece of public space and can, in a sense, colonize it, but also help it, because what the public space needs is people to begin with. And then after that, you can kind of try out whatever ideas you have. My big task has been to acquaint the bureaucrats with who's on top, kind of, because they often have the feeling, either from a wish for power or from a kind of despair, which means that they've been in the bureaucracy so long they feel that nothing can be accomplished. But for one reason or another, they often tend to shut things down rather than open things up. And so they need to be reminded. It's a marvelous and very sort of consistent thing for homeschoolers to take on as a project, to find ways to remind people who administer public space that it's public, and that they need to be open to adventure, and that they can be. In our case, with our cooking fires, I said, I want there to be a fire permit, and the person who was in charge of the park said, well, I'm sorry, but there's a bylaw against that. And I said, well, that's not a good enough answer. Will you check that out? And he, who was really quite a nice person, this guy, he went and checked it out, and he came back and he said, I'm astonished. There is no bylaw against it. And it turned out that the fire department had no problem with that, as long as we observed certain fundamental fire rules. I think that's a thing that homeschoolers can do in a number of areas.
When I was a kid, I found a robin's egg and hid it on a timber in an old abandoned shack that was sitting in a field full of raspberry bushes with a crabapple tree around the back and a stream going by at the bottom of a hill with a rock in the middle. And if you sat still, you could see the minnows swim, and from an overhanging limb, you could listen to the heat bug trill. And early every day, all of my friends and I would play, digging holes and finding gold among the rocks, and looking for salamanders, and eating all the berries, and rolling down the hill in a box. Until one day they came with their machinery and dozed down the shack and hacked up the greenery and stuffed the stream in a concrete pipe and leveled the hill away. And then they built a couple of mounds to make it look round and brought in loads of sod and planted a row of trees that came up to our knees. Without a speck of shade, it looked so odd. And there were no more dragonflies and no crayfishing. And they called it a parkette after a politician and put up a sign saying no ball playing. And nobody ever went there anymore.
Roll call! Come along now, you'll be late for parade. Rip, 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 car.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
Maintaining and sustaining the community. Maybe we can talk a bit about that. It's easy to just stay in your homes and not engage in community.
I was born just after the Second World War in Germany, and my family left in the 50s when I was a little kid. And if you're German of that generation, you never can ever, and you never should, forget that something so dreadful happened, that neighbors were plucked from their communities and taken off to camps and killed there, and that very often the neighbors remaining didn't really know what to do. They might have wanted to ignore that, or they just didn't know what to do. And so one of my central puzzles in my life has been, how can people in a neighborhood get connected enough with each other that in the case of a very bad crisis, how do people make strong enough connections between amongst themselves that in a time of crisis they could be loyal to one another and come through for one another? That's a huge problem. It's a huge puzzle, but it's also a very, a pretty honorable thing to take on as a task, even if you're never going to find you're that successful at it, as a project. And certainly when you have a very strong feeling, as I do, that it's an urgent project. When you have that, then it tends to drive you on for quite a while. The good thing is that there are two things, at least in my neighborhood, that force people out. One is if you have a dog, because then you have to go to the park and walk the dog. And the other is if you have a little kid, because the kids are still enough in touch with the whole of the universe that they refuse to stay at home, most kids anyway. So on that basis, you can start to build enough of hubbub at the park that people then are drawn to it. So that, for example, in this past summer, there's a woman called Georgie Donay who decided that she very much would like to build a structure of clay and straw and water and sand. It's called Cobb. This is a hand-built thing, not built with bales. Put our heads together, she and some of her friends and some of the park staff that we've kind of cultivated there, and we made a plan, and she got a little bit of funding, and she started to put the word out, and so it ended up that over 500 people eventually participated, some of them for 10 minutes, some of them for all summer. including little kids and moms with babies and people from countries where this kind of building was completely part of their culture, and the whole summer long this building project was going on, which now has a very beautiful, we call it a Cobb courtyard, which has a fireplace integrated into it and mosaics. And from a point of view of a homeschooler, this is like a dream. That not only that the kids can participate, which they certainly could, because a lot of the work involved stomping on clay to mix it with your feet as though you were making wine, you know, stomping on grapes, mix the clay and the straw and the sand. You had to stomp on it, and then you got these sort of gloppy things that you then stuck onto the wall as it rose. But a lot of it is also that they were around adults who were doing this really interesting stuff, right? They're right cheek by jowl.
I have a question just about money.
Like, yeah, good question. I'd love to say something about that. How to get money to do good things is a really interesting puzzle. And for some years, we went the route of trying to apply for grants, and we got grants too. But I got really sick of it. I just hated it. And so we stopped. We cooperate quite closely with the Parks Department because the Parks Department is in charge of using our taxes in a way that works out the best for the citizens. They have a lot of money. So one thing is to persuade the parks people to use some of the tax money to make things work better in a park. But the second thing in our case was that when you have food around, you can charge a little bit of extra. You charge money, right? Basically what you're doing really is saying, our park will be nicer if we have food. Let's have food. And then we might charge a little bit extra. And if there are a few parks workers that are salaried, but they don't have, like, something to do every minute, maybe the parks workers can help with the preparation or the serving of the food. So you sort of draw people in. And that's what happens in our case. And you end up with some extra money because almost everybody is willing to spend money to buy food. Over time, we have regarded that money that comes in as a kind of a, like a pooling almost of neighborhood funds. If we need to hire some people that are going to tell stories to the kids. It's a remarkable thing how gradually you can get some money together that way. We also have a farmer's market, and we bake bread out of our ovens, make more money like that a little bit, you know. We have a website that tells lots about this, and it also is a good way to get in touch with us, and that's called www.dufferinpark.ca. Dufferin is spelled D-U-F-F-E-R-I-N. And that has a whole lot more information, but also I think that you can take a nice virtual tour of the park through that very, very active website, but it's still better to come and see us.
You are listening to Radio Facebook on CFMU.
Monkey bars are like some of my favorites, and I wish there was a huge slide to climb. I like the round ones. Now, a park should always have water, and it should always have big slides like at the Wild Waterworks.
Yeah.
What do you think a park should have?
I think the park should be just like Wild Waterworks.
Only better.
Yeah.
All sorts of climbers.
And what do you think a park should have?
A lot of Ferris wheels.
How about the teeter totters here in this park? What do you think of them?
This boingy.
Red boingy?
I don't like them. I like the old ones. They go so high.
So, yeah, I remember going on them too, actually, with Randy. We went very high. Adults could have gone on the teeter totters. They were so high.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then here's the tunnels, they're so much fun. And it was like so much fun trying to climb them, and I never succeeded. I climbed onto the garbage bin's sides on both sides, which is really tippy. And then I jumped up really quick, and then the garbage bin fell down as soon as I got up.
Now we're old enough to climb up without them, and now we can get everything else. And I've never been on a roundabout in my life. I think every park should have roundabouts.
They should have a ginormous spiderweb, not small like the one they had at the Burlington Park, but huge. Just enormous.
A huge spiderweb, yeah.
Yeah, and you climb all over. And then there's a rope one as well as a plastic one that you can pretend to get stuck in. I almost did get caught because I couldn't get out for a while, and I managed it, though.
Burlington Parks are good. Better than Dundas ones.
Yeah, but they have more imagination.
Yeah.
Sanctuary Park had a great roundabout. And I went on it, but I was little, so we didn't go very fast. And all these kids from all over the place who don't know each other just get on. Roundabouts are good for making friends on, because anyone goes on, and whoever's strong enough, like a grown-up. And the swings over there, they're really tight. My bum is always getting caught in them, so I always turn them wrong way round so that they're just straight, and they only sag in a little bit instead of being already sagged.
Is there anything else you guys... Because, you know, if we take this to the city, we need to know other things that might be...
They should have these big climbers. They should have all these climbers with all these obstacle courses.
I think whatever said, we should have... Every park should have a bit of water in it. Swimming pool.
Places like the driving park should have really big pools with diving boards and everything. Mm-hmm. Because there's so much room.
I know. Let's do a complaint about the swimming pool. They took away the diving board, so it's no fun anymore. I want a diving board in the Dundas swimming pool. I just did a little complaint. On a pencil and paper.
All right.
At every park, there should be an obstacle course with all these ropes you have to go in. Just like, you know, in Spy Kids when they have those rope things. Where go kind of out from one rope. All those cool obstacles. I like obstacle courses.
Yeah, and then you had to shinny across a rope. And they had the thing that you go down. The thing. So the Spy Kids obstacle course. Mm-hmm.
And then a trampoline at the end so you can jump onto it.
A trampoline
at the
too.
End of like really high monkey bars, and then you land on the trampoline.
Wow.
At the very end though, only at the end. That makes it scary.
How about you, Brom? What should be in the park?
A roundabout.
Yeah.
A swimming pool.
Uh-huh.
A deep swimming pool, not a pool.
Yeah,
I know.
What else?
Climbers. Swings. Good swings, not tiny, mini, weenie, baby swings.
A trampoline?
Yeah.
To go at the end of the monkey bars, everyone can go on them.
A treehouse?
In a park, there should be tons of forts.
Yeah.
If you get there, like thousands of forts, so lots of kids can get a fort.
How about climbing beams? Like beams that you kind of have to... You know how we go on the trails and sometimes there's beams that you have to stay on?
Yeah, those are fun.
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1. C O.